Hey, it's Travis, and welcome to Marketing Unboxed. I've got a great episode today. I sat down with Andy Brunn, a media director at CCF, an independent advertising agency in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and we had a great time chatting, riffing, really, about a lot of different topics, including what marketing leaders can do to build the capabilities of their team. And part of that has to do with how they're measured. That's a huge part of that. We riffed on the recent news about Facebook and how they've had a down financial quarter, and they were blaming Apple and their new privacy settings on that. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the spread of misinformation and turning a blind eye to that, but we riffed on that and the upcoming changes to marketing with third-party cookies going away and less visibility into analytics and some metrics, how that actually is going to be an opportunity for some people who look at it and approach it the right way. So we talked about that. We talked about how people's buying behavior is not really rooted in logic and how you can use that to your advantage as a marketer, even in B2B. And so a lot of good stuff here. So sit back and enjoy. Hey, Andy, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. Thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, happy to be a part of it. I guess I know who you're rooting for.
Yeah, I'm actually going to the Super Bowl. Never thought I'd say that, but it's actually happening. So
I am as well.
It's oh, are you?
Yeah. It's nice. Pretty wild, but very much looking forward to it.
Nice. Nice. So are you a fan of one of the teams or?
No, I'm actually a Packer fan growing up, and I happened to just through some very lucky work connections got invited. So when they lost, I was pretty bummed, but I'm definitely rooting for you guys. So I'm Andy Brunn. I'm the media director at CCF. We're an independent advertising agency in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I have worked in media, kind of paid media at an agency level my whole career, primarily working with local regional clients, and then also a lot in the health and wellness space, kind of expanding into business marketing. I've always kind of enjoyed working for, more of those kind of underdog brands, not necessarily the lead, but one who has a willingness to try something a little different, look to outmarket versus outspend. And that's kind of where I've carved my niche. So I've jumped around at a few shops over my career and been at CCF now for 10 years and found my home and look to, continue to grow and build the relationships that we have and wake up each morning kind of still excited about, what we can do. And I like the space that we live in. And what I like most about what I do and what we do in the media department is no real right way to do what we're doing. There's a different type of solution potentially that can solve the same problem. And that creativity side of it is what really sparks me and it keeps me motivated.
Nice. That's awesome. And so tell me a little bit about the underdog piece of it and the companies that you like to work with. Like where do they typically win most often?
Yeah, to me it's really buying into working with an agency or working with a partner that can understand what motivates that client's customer base or that client's target audience. And I think that's where we can step in. And what really drew me to CCF when I was at another agency and what's kept me here since is looking at marketing through the lens of the consumer first and having a client partner who understands that the world doesn't revolve around them. They're not the sun kind of in the solar system. The consumer is. And tapping into the mindset and seeing where a brand can help nudge or kind of be a catalyst for change versus just looking at a client or a sector purely through the prism of the brand. Finding a partner and a group of marketers who can see past that and not just look at that has been where I've felt the most kind of rewarding part of my career and also the most meaningful relationships. And to me, at least in my experience, that tends to be smaller brands or smaller brands where marketing has either a bigger seat at the table or can help shape a corporate vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what you mentioned about understanding that it's kind of bigger than the brand, that the customer is really the center of the universe, right? And I think that's where the magic happens. And if as a marketer, that's really where you want to be, right?
Exactly. And it's only, you know, I've been doing this for about 20 years. And over my career, consumers have just become so savvy to what we do. They sniff out the bullshit really quickly and see through what we're doing. And they're now also, you know, taking back control. Like you see it through how Apple's empowered consumers to own their own data and to see what we as marketers have been doing the last few years. And they're saying, hey, this is not how I wanted to be treated. This is not how I want to be marketed to. And they're craving a true conversation versus just being spoken to or told what to do.
Mm-hmm. Or targeted, right?
Exactly.
And yeah, so that's a great segue. I think prior to us hopping on here, we kind of chatted a little bit about paid media and things like that. And I know that what you do is beyond, more than that, but it's kind of an interesting, especially in light of yesterday, Facebook got hammered, absolutely hammered. And I think the timing of this conversation is pretty good in that regard, because they are pointing the finger at Apple. I mean, I'm sure it has nothing to do with false claims of anything. And, you know, them looking the other way for some of these things has nothing to do with people leaving Facebook at all. But I think the threat of cookies eventually going, third-party cookies going away, privacy laws taking effect like they are, starting in the EU and California, and kind of, you know, it's a matter of time before they become more widespread. And I mean, that's going to change the dynamic for marketers who, in my opinion, have kind of become lazy marketers. They've really been kind of beholden to the tech and haven't really had to market anything, right, or understand the audience. And so what can marketers do who might feel like they're kind of in a bind moving forward?
You know, I think you're right. You're exactly right. You know, being able to just go back to what has worked in the past or what has been good enough, you know, whether it is relying on tech or AI and strong algorithms that can prove some level of ROI, or can at least fool a marketing team to perceive that they have a positive ROI on their spend. We have gotten really lazy just as a industry and as an entity. To me, it keeps going back to the consumer and observing them and having conversations with them. A lot of marketers talk about having a conversation with a brand, but very few actually take the time to go and observe. It's one thing that I really push our team to do is to actually, you know, we become beholden to our screens or to our email, and we don't actually exist in the world and see what's going on and actually interact with trends or view someone actually trying to make a purchase decision versus relying on a study.
I mean, do you think the laziness to some degree, it might be a combination of kind of laziness, apathy, and to some degree, I think what marketers have been measured on, which I think have been the wrong things, right? And so it's amazing how marketers should be in tune with their customers and understand them more than they probably understand themselves. How can marketing leaders change that dynamic, change the behavior through other means?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of it, you know, I think the Facebook news yesterday just only pushes us to have to do that. Is our reliance on the Googles, the Apples, the Amazons, Netflix is even, you know, not necessarily an advertising medium, but the power of the data that they've harnessed has shaped our culture. And seeing a revolt from the consumer to that, we're at a crossroads now where if brands and marketers don't start understanding this shift in mindset, they're going to be left behind. And there's challengers. I think you see it in just even the direct-to-consumer space. Brands popping up seemingly out of nowhere that have realized they don't necessarily need a brick and mortar to transact on. Even in my backyard here, Target, realizing the power that they have, becoming almost a media company on top of their own business, but then seeing an upstart brand or a disruptor who can say, hey, I don't need you. You're not a necessary part of my distribution mechanism, and finding a way around that. I think we're at a point now where that is becoming more and more the reality, and the companies that are potentially facing the fate of a Blockbuster or a dinosaur in that space are either going to gobble up those companies, or they're gonna fade away too. So it's becoming real, and I think the area where a marketing team and a marketing team that's willing to stand up for this across an enterprise, those are the brands that I think are going to do well. But at least where I've had the most success, and you know, it varies from mom and pops to small business startups to Fortune 500 brands. If there's a lead and a voice within marketing that can shape that, and the marketing voice is tied to and at the core of the voice of the consumer, I think that's the model forward. And if you continue to listen to and optimize your business based on the customer, you're not really at risk of fading away, because you shift and you evolve as consumers evolve, and that's the model. When you start to become that center of the ecosystem, that's where problems can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think just getting out and just being connected to your customers, because you're going to see it across a wide swath, right? And you're going to start to see trends. The more you talk to people, you'll be able to see the future, because you'll hear things and start to connect the dots and put it together. And you'll be able to stay one step ahead of solving their problems, because you're just listening, right? And you're being engaged.
Yeah. The other side of it too is you start then building a coalition of your customers that become advocates for you as a brand. You know, they start to see what you're doing, your willingness to listen and to have a conversation and change or evolve your business to suit their needs. Their power and their voice then comes at. They're the ones defending you in the comment sections versus a customer manager or, you know, someone in the basement of a corporate office and a social listening tool trying to respond to commentary. They're the ones on the front lines, you know, fighting for you and also demanding that from competition in the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and talking about you when you're not there and building up referrals and I mean, a brand is nothing but a promise, right? And if you keep that promise, people notice, and if they know you're going to keep that promise, they feel better about telling other people about you, because then they won't look like they're not keeping the promise, right?
Yep. So, no, and exactly. And they keep voting for you with their purchases. And
exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I think some marketers might be scared and worried about how are they going to, you know, it's a change, and change is scary. But I mean, one way to look at it is just opportunity. And for me, just being curious, you know, I'm interested to see how it all shakes out, because prior to the technology, the way it was, I kind of came into marketing like straddling the old and the new. You know, I got an MBA in marketing in 2003 through 2006. The iPhone hadn't just kind of started to come out toward the end of that. So it really was the straddle between old and new. And Google Ads was only, gosh, like a year or two old when I started my MBA. And nowhere near what it is now. Social media wasn't even a thought. And so it's interesting. So when I studied it and learned about it formally, it was that traditional kind of mass media, big consumer goods were leading the way. And if you wanted a marketing job, you needed to live on a coast, right? Like, it just, marketing didn't exist outside of that, really, from a career perspective. And it was just a different world, man. And you think about kind of the Mad Men days and the mass marketing, mass advertising. And I heard Seth Godin say something recently about mass marketing and that kind of way, you know, why it was average products. They had to be average because they had to appeal to as many people as possible. And it was just a spray and pray and just get your ad out in front of people and get as many people to buy as possible. And it wasn't targeted at all. And it's interesting to think that, okay, we're kind of skewing back towards that, but with the technology we have, it's not going to go to just average products for average people. It's going to stay targeted in some sense. And I think it's just going to be fun to see, how do we start to move back toward that center, and how does the technology that exists make it different than what it was, right?
Yep. And back to that change discussion, I mean, even you look at the global pandemic and the amount of just behavior change that's going to come out of that. I mean, that's going to be a whole MBA study just in and of itself in terms of the shift you know, in terms of what we as individuals are doing and craving and asking for from brands and really just society in general.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a huge opportunity for some people, right? Like if you embrace it and you understand it and you start to think about how it's going to be different, like some people are going to benefit from this tremendously. Some people are going to lose. And so
it's going to be very interesting. And, you know, you talk about kind of the Mad Men days and the pure mass media, you know, the couple TV channels that everyone watched and how fragmented we've come. And now it seems like the most popular mass media, you know, is sports. And, and at least in our country, it's football. And, you know, with the Super Bowl coming up and looking at how do you combine that mass appeal, that almost universal mass appeal that is sports and football right now. But you bring in a player like Amazon, who's got the data behind it and then becoming a real player next season in it. That to me is, if done properly and if done by embracing their customer feedback, can be really powerful, because then brands that I work with on a day-to-day basis that don't have the budget to work with a Fox or CBS or an NBC on a national basis can tap into some of that ecosystem and that delivery and tap into that fandom, which to me is really interesting and intriguing and is where things I think can be possible. And part of that also relies on those big tech data aggregators opening up a bit of what they are collecting. And it's what Facebook's dealing with right now. It's what Google's been dealing with. And if done improperly, Amazon will feel the wrath too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of starting with Amazon and how they're going to become more of a player. And I'm excited about that, mostly because I want to cut the cord from DirecTV, man. It's so bad. And that's the only way I can watch my Bengals is through DirecTV. And I think it's just, every other sports league has their own streaming, and I don't know why the NFL hasn't. It just drives me crazy. I used to like DirecTV, and that's the thing. I thought their customer service used to be fantastic, and I thought they were really a customer-first business and brand. And then AT&T purchased them, and it just went downhill, and now I can't cut the cord fast enough, man. And short of moving to Cincinnati to, you know, Amazon or somebody is going to be my only way to do that. And so it's just interesting how quick brand perception can change just based on when you feel it as a consumer, when it starts to become less customer centric, you know?
Exactly. I find with talking specifically about the NFL, which obviously has the biggest fan base, you know, and to be so far behind on the streaming side of it, and then flipping to potentially a completely dying sport in baseball, depending on what ends up happening. But the platform that they built that is really now what ESPN Plus and Disney is based on, the disconnect seemingly there in terms of being a heritage sport that's got the most cutting edge tech and now being the sport that's leading the way in terms of eyeballs, but can't seem to figure it out to appease fans like yourself or, you know, a Packer fan here in Minnesota like me.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, MLB TV, man, like they got it right a long time ago. You know, they rolled it out. I'm a Reds fan living in the Northwest. And I've loved that platform. I watch Reds games all the time. And it is an interesting dynamic when you think about it from the age and kind of the types of sports that they are and kind of how they're seen. But yet on the technology side, Major League Baseball is so far ahead of the NFL. Thinking about the Super Bowl and that for a minute, kind of makes me think of another piece of marketing. And I feel like a lot of marketers, and I know this is a generalization, but I think it's where the cutoff is between marketers who really understand psychology and why people buy something, even in B2B, why, versus thinking of things in a more logical sense. And I think some marketers tend to think about what they would do and tell their own story and try to think that customers act the same way. But I think that the big difference, man, is when you really start to understand your customer, like we've talked about, and understand that why. And it's not rational by any means. And the Super Bowl is a perfect example of that. Like the price of tickets right now, I mean, absurd, absolutely absurd. And if you would have told me a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that hey, you know, the Bengals are going to go to the Super Bowl and you're going to be willing to spend this much on a ticket, I would have said you're crazy. You're absolutely crazy. You know, and I have friends who, I'm a Seahawks season ticket holder and used to live in Seattle, and I thought about going a couple times then, and I have friends who went, and I kind of knew what they paid, and they got their tickets through the team for face value, so I knew what face was, right? And so I kind of thought about that, and as I was kind of, as the Bengals kept winning, and it started to become more real that it could happen, I started to put a price out there, right, in my mind of, okay, I know face, I mean, yeah, I guess it was 9 years ago when the Seahawks went, but I know it's about $1,500. Okay, you know, I'll pay $2,500, you know, possibly for a Super Bowl ticket. And so that was in my head. And the Bengals won, and I've got all these crazy emotions I've never felt before. Like, it was weird. It was really weird. And I'm excited. And I booked all my travel a week before the playoffs even started. And I always do that. Even though the Bengals hadn't won a playoff game in 30 years, I still did it when they made the playoffs just to have that piece taken care of early and cheap. And so after the Rams won and it was kind of decided and I jumped on to look at tickets, my mood changed from ecstatic and happy to dread and a little depression. I'm like, how? This isn't what I thought. And how am I going to pull this off? And then it all started to become relative, man. When this new price was set in my head of what it was when I first saw it, and I knew that having Seahawks season tickets, that if I have to hold them long enough, I'm going to start dropping my price, right? Because I don't want to get stuck with them. So I knew that would happen. And so I kept watching prices every day, like five times a day, going to StubHub and Ticketmaster and refreshing and seeing have they dropped. It was like I was watching a stock price or something. Like, it was crazy. And they dropped a little bit. And then I got an email from the Bengals about this package that includes a tailgate and open bar and all this stuff. I'm like, well, I'm going alone. That would be fun. I'm going to do that, right? So I pulled the trigger. And kind of where I'm going with this is, if you were a marketer and you were purely basing how you marketed to someone based on what you would do or what would be rational, like, you'd never sell a Super Bowl ticket, right? Like, no one would buy it. No one would ever buy it. So I think it's just kind of crazy how, and a lot of it was nostalgia and just a personal deep feeling I have with the Bengals that is rooted since probably 1982, you know? And so I'm old as dirt. So now everybody knows I've been around for a while, but yeah, I think you've got to get into the psychology of people and understand why they would do something, and it's not going to be rational.
And it's not going to be linear either.
Right.
That's the other piece too, that I think we get hung up on, and we still talk, and I'll still probably have a presentation deck in a few weeks that'll have a very linear sales funnel. Yeah. And it's not that. And, you know, you look at the irrationality of it, seemingly is what is true. And it's, there's relapse, and there's the study of all of that is, I think, critical to what we're doing. And then also to show and to position a brand, or even in your case, a team putting something together and, you know, then appealing to you, positioning something that is then really about a community. What jumped out to me is a package that you purchased ties into why you love the team. Mm-hmm. Is that it's, you have a chance now to be there with like-minded individuals. Your experience, your memories, you know, win or lose, you're going to have a fantastic time meeting people that have the same passion and love that you have. Hmm. And that's going to be what's going to be, you know, meaningful to you versus, you know, relying on a third party broker that is trying to do the same to you. I just had the experience earlier this week of going to a U.S. soccer qualifier here in St. Paul, Frigid Minneapolis, World Cup soccer game in February. Whose wow. idea is that? But I had a similar mindset. I had a chance through season tickets to buy tickets at face. They were $175 a piece to be six rows up. And the lack of me being able to sell or get rid of the tickets dampened the whole experience for me to a degree. I still had a pretty good time, but I had to drag my 12-year-old daughter and my wife along. And when my 12-year-old daughter was crying at halftime because she was too cold, it's not like I was exactly having the greatest time in the world and waving or cheering on the USA. And that's what my takeaway is. So many people will tell you how they feel. You just have to ask, and you just have to be willing to have a real conversation.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
And not necessarily walk into it with a predetermined answer or result, and you're purely just trying to validate it. It's just, if you truly walk in and take a journalistic approach of just understanding what the situation is and listening, and then going back to the war room and trying to figure out, how do we tackle this?
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned something earlier about it not being linear, but yet marketers think in a very linear way. Sales thinks in a very linear way. And I'm a big fan of Chris Walker. And as a marketer, I feel like I've evolved. You know, people will say things and look at things a different way. And then it makes me look at things and reevaluate, you know, because I used to market a certain way. And I used to think that was the way. And then I hear some other people talk about their experience and just, it's not just opinions, right? I think that's the cool thing about marketing is it's kind of a science in that a lot of people are always testing. They have hypotheses. Will this work? I don't know, but let's try it. And then when it does, they share. They generally share how it worked. And this goes back to what Chris talks about a lot is attribution and not over relying on attribution, right? And then it comes back to understanding the customer. And if you understand the customer and you are out there and in where meeting them where they are instead of trying to get them to come to where you are, your attribution isn't going to tell you that story, right? And so I think that's been a change for me. And I think that is a lot about like what you're talking about of how marketers will need to change with this new world that they're going to have to go out and meet people where they are, right?
Yep, we have found and had some real strong successes as an agency kind of trying to take that approach. And a theme or a through line that we've seen is really just being the brand that shows empathy and to be able to bring that forward. We did it a while ago in the tobacco cessation space where there's so much hardlining and shame that's based towards smokers or, you know, individuals who are addicted. But to be able to take the approach of the carrot versus the stick, you know, and try to, you know, acknowledge the shame component that was smoking and still is, but had not become normalized now was a strong approach. And we're carrying it forward right now. We're doing a lot of work with the state of Minnesota and the Department of Health here around COVID messaging and, you know, trying to, it's obviously a real challenge for states and public health to try to convince people now a couple of years into a pandemic about getting a vaccine. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to hear from the government. No one wants to hear from the individuals who are our clients, but to hear from people who are telling their story, humanizing things can be a way in, and that your decision 2 years ago about something can change. Mm-hmm. And that to me is where that nonlinear path goes, is that your mindset and all of ours, we shift, we evolve over time. There's certain beliefs that I had growing up that have shifted wildly, and I'm sure everyone has. Your experiences shape who you are. The breakthrough in terms of marketing is when you can get deeper and you can understand that human beings, we're very complex and we do not understand a lot of what motivates us. But if we can tap into our own decisions or look at it, and ideally also as brands and marketers, bring your customers along to that journey. You can just learn a lot by observing and doing that testing and learning and having a brand that's willing to do that. And not all brands are. They're very close to the vest and very sacred about, you know, dollars that they're investing, but you don't grow then as a marketer. So trying to take that approach just down to organizational structure, where things get invested, how things get, you know, budgeted for, those are part of the changes that need to happen too.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think if you were to kind of write down your thoughts today about how you view marketing, your take on marketing and how it should be done, and then you reviewed it a year from now, hopefully that's changed a little bit, right? Or else you're really not growing. And I think that's probably a good litmus test, a good way to measure if you need to dig in and kind of open up your mind a little bit and start learning again, is if a year from now you look at that and you're like, you still agree with it.
It's a tough conversation to bring up if you're the ones doing it, because you know that we've had a hard time historically validating investments that are getting made. You go back to the very old quote about, you know, marketing, and I know marketing's working, or 50% of my marketing's working, but I don't know which 50% it is. We're still largely, even with attribution models in place, and we're still living more in that world than we are where we think we are. But to be able to have some skin in the game and to be able to truly partner with an organization or an entity, to me, is where that comes through. And to be able to try different things and to acknowledge that not all of them are going to work, and being honest and being transparent. I think part of what's happening now, just with data pushback on the Facebooks of the world, things are going to become a lot more transparent. And I think that's all a good thing. And I think I look at it as a individual and a consumer myself, it's what I want to see. And from a marketer and being able to be a lead at an organization, not trying to stunt that evolution, but embrace it. That's what's exciting about me. I don't want to be known as just a person that just, we only recommend TV ads because that's most profitable, or historically 20 years ago, we saw the greatest success. It's solving problems. I'm trying to do so with a human approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said something that stood out, is that it might not work. And I think as a marketer, if you can become comfortable with that, you're going to be successful.
The way I look at it is often, and we'll include it in scopes of work as we're onboarding, is that stakeholder interview conversation. And to me, it's casting a bit of a wider net there to include really all aspects and all individuals or all cohorts that are potentially interacting with the brand. So expanding it beyond the C-suite or maybe a sales lead at an organization, but broadening it to a customer base, a loyal customer, a lapsed customer, a competitive loyalist, getting a full understanding of where that picture is and bringing both sales and marketing to the table at the front, at the beginning of the process, to me is where the most success and buy-in happens. It's that when something goes wrong, the easiest blame for someone in marketing is to blame sales or sales to blame marketing. But when you're kind of rowing in the same direction, or at least you have an understanding from the jump, and you're also communicating too, in terms of what are we doing? You know, often what I see in is that we might have a seat at the table at the beginning, but then we don't talk regularly, or I'm too busy, you know, trying to sell, and I don't have time for the ad agency or the marketing team to talk. But to me, that's where the success can come from.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think silos need to be blown up, and there needs to be more collaboration and information sharing among the teams. And I think company wide, really.
Yeah, no, I think it all comes back to that irrational nature. And if we start embracing that, it can help start to tear down some of those walls. Is the team problem solving, I think, is the future. And I think the brands and organizations that embrace that earlier are just going to have a leg up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that could be an entire other conversation of how you structure that and structure compensation and metrics and KPIs and that to foster the right behavior instead of protectionism and blame. Right. So I think that's a lot of it too. So cool. Yeah. I really appreciate you coming on and chatting today.
Yeah, no, really appreciate it. Thanks for the invite, and enjoyed the conversation, and I'll be cheering on your Bengals next weekend. I'm excited for you.
Yeah. And so if people wanted to find you and connect with you, where can people find you? Where do you hang out?
Yeah, I'm not honestly that active on social media right now. I'm probably best connected on LinkedIn. So you can find me, Andy Braun. I'm with CCF. That's the ad agency that I work for. Our website is ccf-ideas.com, but I'd welcome a conversation. I think this is what I like out of sharing ideas and sharing thoughts with marketing professionals. Getting my thoughts out there in a 100 or 200 characters is not my strong suit. So I appreciate the ability to expand on this forum and appreciate the opportunity. Thank you. And, you know, excited to follow you in the future.
Same here. Yeah. Thanks a lot.